summer. Our scripture reading for today is found in the Gospel according to Mark. We're looking at chapter 5, verses 21 through 43. When Jesus had crossed over again in the boat to the other side, a large crowd had gathered around him, so he stayed by the seashore. One of the synagogue officials named Jairus came up and upon seeing him, fell at his feet and implored him earnestly, saying, "My little daughter is at the point of death. Please come, lay your hands on her so that she will get well and live." And he went off with him. And a large crowd was following him and pressing in on him. A woman who had been hemorrhaging for 12 years and had endured much by the hands of many physicians had spent all that she had and was not helped at all, but rather had grown worse. After hearing about Jesus, came up in the crowd behind him and touched his cloak. For she thought, "If I just touch his garments, I will get well." Immediately, the flow of her blood was dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her affliction. Immediately, Jesus, perceiving in himself that the power proceeding from him had gone forth, turned around in the crowd and said, "Who touched my garments?" His disciples said to him, "You see the crowd pressing in on you, and you say, 'Who touched me?'" And he looked around to see the woman who had done this, but the woman, fearing and trembling, aware of what had happened to her, came and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. And he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your affliction." While he was still speaking, they came from the house of the synagogue official, saying, "Your daughter has died. Why trouble the teacher anymore?" But Jesus, overhearing what had been spoken, said to the synagogue official, "Do not be afraid any longer, only believe." And he allowed no one to accompany him except Peter and James and John, the brother of James. And they came to the house of the synagogue official, and he saw a commotion and people loudly weeping and wailing. And entering in, he said to them, "Why make a commotion and weep? The child has not died, but is asleep." And they began laughing at him, and putting them all out, he took the child's father and mother and his own companions, and he entered the room where the child was. Taking the child by the hand, he said to her, "Talitha kum," which translates, "Little girl, I say to you, get up." Immediately the girl got up and began to walk, for she was 12 years old, and immediately they were completely astounded. And he gave them strict orders that no one should know about this, and he said that something should be given to her to eat. The word of the Lord. Seated. So I had a unique privilege this week, and I got to speak to a man named Elliot. Now, Elliot was not just any average guy I met on the street. This is a man named Elliot Daly, and Elliot Daly was one of the early writers and producers of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. I know. There is not a single person in that room that does not have their heart strangely warmed when hearing of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. It doesn't matter if you grew up watching Mr. Rogers, grew up watching your kids watch Mr. Rogers. You have had an experience of knowing what the uniqueness, the unique contribution, I should say, of Fred Rogers to our national consciousness. The conversation was fantastic, finding insights into what went into what made up Fred Rogers and what made up Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. So much so that, it, of course, it inspired Carol and I yesterday to go see a new movie that is presently out called Won't You Be My Neighbor? Now, if you are looking for a movie on this hot day, don't be outside. Go to the movies and check out Won't You Be My Neighbor? It is a documentary on Fred Rogers and Mr. Rogers' neighborhood, and it is worth seeing. So I've been spending a lot of time thinking about Fred Rogers this week. One of the things that came to mind, because of course as a child I was a Mr. Rogers devotee. In fact, when I told my mother, who emails me every morning and just says hello, and I tend to say, hey, what are you doing? And she says, what are you doing back? And I tell her what I'm doing, and that's about how we start our day. So I told her who I was interviewing. I was interviewing Elliot Daly and how he was involved with Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. And she says, she goes, you used to imitate Fred Rogers. And I said, what? What are you talking about? She goes, I don't remember you ever taking off your shoes without tossing them in the other hand to be able to put them away. Like, that's how you took off your shoes when you were little. Of course, she goes on in the story and says she wrote Mr. Rogers that says, well, my son takes off his shoes and he tosses them in the other hand just like you. 2 weeks later, my mother tells me, is that Fred Rogers gets on the screen and as he's taking off his shoes said, I read a letter that some of you like to imitate me. And so he did it a few times, and my mother was like, that's what I told Mr. Rogers that you did. And I immediately thought, I am the most important person in the entire world because Mr. Rogers read my letter. You know, it was such an impact that this person made on our national consciousness. There are so many things now as an adult, as I look back on Mr. Rogers and Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood and Fred Rogers' life, that I realize how important and how subversively important Fred Rogers really was. I remember a scene when I was a kid, and I remember this from being a kid, didn't think much about it when I was a kid. Now as an adult, I can reflect back on this scene where in the news, I don't know if you remember this, but in the news, there was a large controversy about African Americans and white people swimming in the same swimming pool in the South. You may remember that that was part of the news. Well, Fred Rogers was always committed to addressing social issues in Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, recognizing the fact that kids are paying attention to the news. Now, Fred Rogers didn't get on the screen and do any lecturing, didn't offer his opinion, didn't say how we should believe or how we should think. You know what Fred Rogers did? Fred Rogers had a scene where in Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, it was hot outside. And so Mr. Rogers was sitting out on his front step and he had a little kiddie pool and he was pouring water into the kiddie pool over his feet. And as he was doing that, the neighborhood policeman, who was an African-American man, came by and said, hey, Mr. Rogers, what are you doing? He says, oh, it's such a hot day. I'm cooling off here in the pool and the water feels so good. You know, the cadence, I got to slow down to be the cadence of Mr. Rogers. You know, it feels so good, the water pouring over your feet on such a hot day. It's so relieving. The policeman replied, yes, it really is a hot day. And Fred Rogers said, would you like to join me? At first, the policeman resisted and said, oh, no, I don't want to do that. He says, no, I would love for you to do that. And the policeman says, sure, I would like to do that. And there it is, the African-American policeman takes off of his shoes and his socks. And there, in one of the most beautiful acts of loving rebellion, put their feet in this kiddie pool together. Not talking about race, not talking about issues, just talking about how good the water felt. And I look back on those things and I think, you know, in this culture that we have now of so much yelling and so much talking and so much shouting, turn on the news. I don't even want to turn on the news anymore. We were talking about our wedding, and I remember being at the hotel, going down, and I'm having this great weekend, all family. I go down to have breakfast, and there are three TVs that all are on different news stations, all yelling. And I'm just like, I don't want any part of this. There is so much shouting. And I thought, never before do we need people who won't talk, but we'll just live out love. We'll just live out grace. I thought that this passage, which shows up in our lectionary passages for this week, was the perfect example. Fred Rogers, if you didn't know, was not just a children's television person. Fred Rogers was an ordained Presbyterian minister. And the things that he did, he was actually ordained by the Presbyterian Church to television. That's what he did. The Presbyterian ordained him to go and do Mr. Rogers' neighborhood. And he showed up as a minister of the gospel to the millions of children around the world who would watch him. Never overt, never necessarily ever speaking the name of Jesus or God or any kind of religion. He just lived it out. And when I look at this passage, I go, this is the lens by which Fred Rogers looked at the world, through the lens of Jesus. I don't know if you really paid attention to the nuances of this passage. Jesus, it says that he arrived on the lakeshore. He arrived from a land called Gennesaret, which is where he had performed only one miracle. It was a miracle of a man that was filled with a legion of demons. He was able to heal that man, and if you recall the story, the demons come out. It's a very dramatic story. Demons come out and say, don't just send us into the air, send us into those pigs over there. And Jesus says, fine, go in those pigs, goes in those pigs, and pigs go crazy, go over a cliff. It's really a dramatic story. But the fact that there were pigs, and there were pig farmers, tells you a little bit about this region. This was not a kosher Jewish community that Jesus was in. Jesus was asked to leave this community, goes back to the lakeshore, and a crowd gathers. And I don't know what Jesus was thinking about when he saw this crowd. He had come from a place that for the most part was an outcast place that people didn't visit, people didn't accept, they didn't want people from there. These people were not kosher, they were unclean, we don't want them. And here Jesus is coming from that place, and a crowd gathers. I don't know if Jesus was wondering what the intentions of this crowd was. Were there crowds like normal who just wanted to be healed? Was this a hostile crowd? It's unknown. Jesus, as he pulls up, sees the crowd and just decides to stay on the lakeshore. I think that's the right move. Figure out what's going on here. But Jesus couldn't help but miss the synagogue ruler who was coming through the crowd and implored him and said, Jesus, my daughter is dying. Talk about somebody who has the world at his fingertips. The synagogue ruler, this was the man who has achieved the highest rank he could achieve in that community. He was head of the synagogue. He was the big pastor, the bishop in town. He comes and says, my daughter is dying. Will you please come? And of course, Jesus, moved with compassion, regardless of what was really going on in the crowd, Jesus moved and says, yes, I will come. Moves through the crowd, and the crowd is pressing in. But then there's this woman. And I should say something about this woman. Not only in Jewish culture at the time were women low on the totem pole, as it were, but this is not just any woman. This is a woman that it says has been experiencing bleeding for 12 years. The reason why they note that, she wasn't bleeding from her arm, she wasn't bleeding from her eye. This is menstrual bleeding that she's having. She's having a time that puts her in an outcast position in society beyond the outcast position she already finds herself in. Understand that this is a person that for 12 years was labeled unclean. Can you imagine going through your world, your life, and everybody looks at you and says, that person is unclean. Do not touch them. Do not spend time with them. It says that she endured much in the hands of doctors. This woman has not only suffered socially and physically, she suffered the pain of going through whatever medicine was in that day. This woman has suffered for 12 years. She's desperate. This woman recognizes the fact that most likely this Jewish rabbi is not going to touch her. That if she gives any kind of request, it can't be like the synagogue ruler who is bold and makes a request. Of course, Jesus would respond to his request, but this woman, I don't think so.
And she says, but if I can just sneak through the crowd, maybe I can catch a little bit of healing if I just grab his jacket. Maybe I'll just get a little bit of healing. And she does, goes through the crowd. Jesus, who is on a mission of urgency with somebody very important in town, feels it and stops and turns and says, who touched me? His disciples, like, you're kidding me, right? The answer to that question is everybody. Everybody is touching you right now. But Jesus knew who he was talking about, and that woman knew that he was talking about her. Because it wasn't just a regular touch, it was a touch of faith. And so Jesus turns around. The woman is terrified because she knows what the potential consequences of this is. She is an unclean woman, but she's looking in the eyes of Jesus and feels the boldness and says, it was me. And Jesus, without judgment, says, why did you just steal healing from me? Who do you think you are? Don't you know I'm walking with the most important person in town here? This is a synagogue ruler. This is one of ours. And his daughter is dying. Don't you know? How dare you? He turns around and he says, daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace. I love that story. That Jesus took a minute and took some time. When I was watching the Fred Rogers documentary, I was so struck of how often Fred Rogers took time with kids. And whether they were able-bodied kids or disabled kids or kids of different races, he took time. Anytime a kid wanted to come up to him and tell him a story and he took time. Fred Rogers had stuff to do, but he took time with everyone. And I thought about Jesus taking the time, even though he was on this urgent mission. And this mission was so urgent that as Jairus' servant comes and says, don't bother the teacher anymore, your daughter is gone. Jesus turns to him and says, no, just trust me. And you see the rest of the story. They make it all the way to the house, and Jesus raises Jairus' daughter from the dead, gives his daughter back to him. And I think what was so striking to me when I read this passage, I was thinking about what it means to live in love, what it means to believe that people are equal, what it means to believe that people have value, that everybody has value. Fred Rogers, near the end of his life, bore a great deal of criticism. He got accused of creating this culture of what we call now the everybody gets a trophy culture. The one where everybody is special, so nobody is, kind of a culture. And I agree. I don't like the everybody gets a trophy kind of culture. You know, I think there's got to be room for people to achieve in their areas that they're wanting to achieve in. But Fred Rogers was never talking about that kind of achievement. He wasn't talking about everybody special because everybody wins a prize, everyone gets a trophy, everyone should be equal on that kind of achievement level. That's not what he was talking about. But he was speaking directly against a society that ranks everybody versus on achievement and status and position and abilities. What Fred Rogers was trying to communicate is the same thing Jesus is trying to communicate through this passage, because again, Fred Rogers followed this Jesus. Because when Fred Rogers looked at somebody who could run or sing or dance or was in a wheelchair or had a different color and a different culture, what he saw was a special child of God, as we all are. I'm happy to be part of this family. Being received here as a member is a special privilege to me. I love this particular family. I love this family in this place and what God has called us to do. But I love being part of the greater church, the church universal. I love being part of the called people of God, where truly all of us have value. Not just the person standing up here, not the people on the board, not all of us are uniquely valuable in the eyes of God, because we are the children, the beloved children of God. And as we look across our world, God help me, I don't want to tell you how to think about refugees or immigration or things like that. I want to invite you to look at people the way Jesus does.
I want to invite you to look at everybody as the beloved of God. And then you decide what you should do, how you should think, how you should act. But the one thing that we can't ignore is that we are loved. And I long for a world that we stop talking about it and stop shouting about it and stop arguing with it, turn off the television, and just go out and love some people. The way I want to end is as something that Fred Rogers did often. Fred Rogers actually did it at the Emmy Awards. Crowd full of people all in their finest dresses receiving awards. This was a time of praise. And he said, you know, all of us that were here are here because somebody loved us. Somebody saw our value. And they treated us that way. They treated us in a way that they believed that we mattered. All of us have that. And I would like each of us to take 1 minute and to think about that person. That person who loved us to hear. And I think let's do that. Let's take 1 minute in silence and think about that person or those people in our lives who loved us that way, who loved us without judgment, without fear, without any kind of hesitation. They loved us. Let's take a minute. I'll watch the time. Now go and do likewise. Amen.